You're listening to the Fusion Patrol Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And come splash back in time with us to the oceans of June 1977 for Man from Atlantis 4, The Disappearances. Now, this is the fourth and final Man from Atlantis movie, and that's in air quotes, TV movie, and or pilot, depending on how you want to look at it. And in this episode, the Man from Atlantis, Mark Harris, has to get involved in the investigation of finding some missing scientists when Elizabeth Merrill is kidnapped. I'm going to start by saying that I think that there may be a few instances where we may say something didn't make sense in this episode, and it's just slightly possible that it did make sense, and the copy that we are watching, which aired in syndication somewhere many years ago, appears to have more cut out of it than is prudent for just normal commercial breaks, because there are a couple of instances where it just totally seems to be missing.
Yeah, there was some jarring moments where, yeah, it felt like they were just, well, I from what I can gather, someone had videotaped these.
These are off of a VHS tape that was recorded back in
during the actual broadcast.
No. These are from the 80s sometime. This is like a local television station late at night or on Saturday afternoon kind of thing. So you know how they have a tendency to sneak in more commercials. So.
Oh, well, yeah, well, they strip them.
Yeah, and I think this one's probably had some. Or it could just be incredibly illogical at points.
I would not be too surprised with that.
I just say that because we might be bashing on some poor writer in this episode, and it turns out it's not his fault. So I just wanted to say that. So what did you think of the episode?
Well, you're being awfully generous. I'll go ahead and bash. This episode was garbage. Although I laughed like crazy only because it was just so – I'll put it this way. This was my favorite one only because it was so god-awful bad.
Ah, one of those.
Yeah, this was a real turkey.
I didn't think much of it. I think it's gotten a little bit as we said, they just don't know what to do with Mark Harris and the idea of this show.
They have no clue really what to do with him. And then to make things even – well, the episode starts off rather – mundane, kind of mediocre, which is somewhat better than the last Man from Atlantis episode, which started at the bottom and stayed there. Yeah. But this one, it started off somewhere in the middle.
The last one started at the bottom and then dug a hole in the bottom so it could get lower.
Well, this one, I don't know if I would say this one really dug a hole, but it certainly declined, or it just went down as the story kept going, and it just made it unintentionally funny.
Well, let's work our way through it a little bit. We start off, Mark Harris has got a new superpower. He can do a chemical analysis of any substance.
Oh, that's right.
With his, well, we don't know what with. They speculate.
With his fingers.
It's his fingers or his taste or some senses we haven't even begun to realize. And, I mean, how convenient is that? I'd be willing to bet by the end of this episode, the whole thing will hinge upon Mark being able to do a completely accurate chemical analysis.
Boy, that's one heck of a leap, but let's keep going.
We also get a lesson from Miller about profligacy, the recklessly wasteful mining and destruction of the resources on the surface of the Earth.
Oh, we're moralizing now.
Oh, big time. Big time.
I wonder if that'll play a part of this episode as well.
I wonder if that will play a part later on in this episode, too. But, unfortunately, they can't continue their discussion of profligacy and Mark's amazing new powers because they've got to meet with Dick Stoneman, who is a lawyer representing some organization that's going to give out a new ship to the Foundation. And he wants to schmooze a little bit with Elizabeth, and he comes in to talk with them about they're going to give him this boat, and he's brought his secretary along, and we have been we've been privileged to see by means of the narrative that he is not a nice guy.
Oh, he's very, very smarmy.
Yes, as right a lawyer, he's smarmy, but we also see him talking with, like, his secretary, and before they go meet Dr. Merrill, and, you know, how they're gonna do something. We don't know what it is, but they've obviously
got something
planned.
Well, clearly he has an ulterior motive.
Exactly. And his secretary, and I put that in air quotes, even though no one can see me doing that, is obviously not too crazy.
She's not too bright.
She's not too bright, but she's also not interested in the idea, and that makes me wonder why she's even there.
Well, it's funny, as we were seeing her, I mean, her entire behavior, there was a very bizarre detachment to everything.
Well, she obviously doesn't like Dick Stoneman. I mean, she's repulsed by him. He tries
touching
her.
I think at one point
she
calls him Stoneface.
Yeah, she calls him Stone something. I forgot what it was.
She calls him Stoneface.
Stonehead or Stoneface or, yeah.
And I just figure, oh, well, either this man has more than one identity, or she just doesn't like the guy.
She doesn't like him. You can see she shies away from him and all this during the course. So, but she doesn't do anything. I mean, she and two ruffians are brought out by plane to meet Stoneman, and she seems to serve no purpose in what comes next.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, why was she even there in the first place?
Because she obviously doesn't want to be there. She's a liability. The only reason she's there is to fall hopelessly in love with Mark Harris.
Well, I think maybe in terms of character, maybe they thought she would be a good one to give some credibility to Stoneman's little facade. But even if that were the case, I'd pick somebody that'd be more into the part and not her.
Right. This is a person who clearly doesn't want to do this.
She doesn't care.
Yeah. So she doesn't even want to go on the tour. She's just, like, sulking. You know, they're taking Stoneman and showing him around the Institute, and she doesn't want to. So she's just sitting there in the lobby kind of picking her nose or whatever she's doing. And she hears these dolphin noises. And so she's lured into one of the back rooms where she meets Mark, who is sitting in a tank in his little sleepy coffin water tank.
With a bunch of carp.
With a bunch of fish, yeah. And
so I guess carp understand dolphin.
Yeah, well, he does state, I was trying to find a way to communicate with him. We never actually see him making the dolphin noises, but I'm guessing he was making those noises.
It's a safe assumption because I don't think carp make any – I don't think they vocalize.
Right. But was he playing a tape or was that him making the noise or
– Ooh,
you know,
good
I mean,
question.
It's just we never actually see what he's doing. He's just in the tank kind of – fondling fish, and you know, the girl has instantly got the hots for him, and she's asking him questions, and he's got no clue. Anyway, they want Elizabeth to meet her the next day on a pier, and this is one of the spots that doesn't make any sense, and I think it's cut, because the next time we see them, Elizabeth is on the pier, and Mark is nearby the pier at an amusement
arcade. He's in some kind of boardwalk.
Yeah. I'm guessing that they came together and she left Mark there and then he went on.
Yeah, that was. But I came to that same conclusion, but it's never spelled out.
I think that's just missing. I think that's been cut out of the show. That's one of the points where I think that the copy that's available to us is not complete. So we'll never know for sure, but Mark is nearby, but in an arcade, playing around with funhouse mirrors, and Stoneman and his goon squad kidnap Elizabeth. She figures it out, but too late. They kidnap her. Mark comes to her rescue. They thump him on the head. They lock him up. She tries to tell him, you know, he's got to have water every 4 hours, but they don't care. and they leave him to die.
Of course, as we all know, Mark has to be in water, and if he's not in water on some kind of regular basis, he starts to, for lack of a better term, suffocate.
Yeah.
And he starts gasping, which catches the attention of a seal.
Yeah. Is the seal coming to help?
Well, that was my first thought. The seal was coming onto the deck to help, but then you just hear these disembodied voices, you know, of a little girl, "Oh, Daddy, look at the seal," you know, or whatever. And they said, "Oh, I'll leave it alone," you know, whatever. And then that's it.
Yeah.
And we're done. We're done with that. It was completely irrelevant. It was just needless padding, which I could not, for the life of me, figure out why the heck they did that.
Yeah, it was unclear. I mean, was it just some coincidence that a seal happened to hop up on there? Or was it coming in response to Mark Harris? In which case,
yeah,
it gave up pretty easy.
It seemed to know that Mark was there. I mean, it was clearly responding to Mark on some level. At least that was sort of the impression that I got. Like, maybe it heard him gasping. But the only thing I can figure in terms of why was the scene there? Maybe when they were getting ready to film it, they looked and said, "Oh, can you stretch something out? We need like another 90 seconds to 2 minutes." Okay, I'll write this stupid little scene and throw it in there. It'll be a throwaway scene.
Yeah, and you got to figure when you're bringing animal handlers, that can't be the cheapest of scenes to do either.
No, but then considering where they're filming these episodes, I mean, they're filming them, you know, I would imagine in the Los Angeles, Long Beach area, and it's not too hard to
probably get to. What happened is that seal actually leaped up on the thing while they were filming, and they just guys like, let the cameras roll.
You know, that's a possibility. Keep the cameras rolling, and we'll just throw in some dialogue over that, you know? Hey, you know, stranger things have happened.
Anyway,
I'd like to think that some idiot just had no idea what the heck they were writing. But you know that I'll give them a little bit of credit this one time and say, okay, sure, it was a coincidence.
Because all television is made by coincidence. Oh. Anyway, so Mark spends the entire night.
Because yeah.
The next day, the police, Miller and CW come along, and the police had found the car. There are no police around. But, you know, they found the missing car, and so they go to the pier, and they find Mark, and he dives in the water, and okay, everything's fine.
I'm interested that he did manage to survive the night.
Yes.
Because all indications in past, especially in the pilot, say that he cannot live that long out of water.
16 hours, he'll die. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're not really sure how long he was in there, but...
Well, I kind of get the feeling. Well, I get the feeling it was a long time. I would say it was close to 24 hours.
It seems like Elizabeth would be meeting them earlier in the day on the pier.
Well, there's something in the entire filming of the way when Mark was walking around the boardwalk, there weren't that many people there.
Fishermen were coming out.
Right. It kind of had that feeling that this was early in the day. Things were just opening up. So that was my impression.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth was kidnapped just shortly after that, and assuming that it's the morning again, I'm pretty certain it is the morning.
They specifically said it's this morning.
Right. So, yeah, 24 hours, roughly, and Mark is still alive. Wow, talk about a miracle.
Yeah, lucky for him.
Yeah, no kidding.
And for us, so that the show can continue on.
Oh, damn. Anyway.
Well, the FBI have got involved because it's a kidnapping, and they come and talk to him and explain that this Dick Stoneman guy has been implicated in, I think, 8 other kidnappings of scientists or disappearances, as they call them, because there have been no bodies and no demands for ransom. And not to mention, is he directly involved in 8 of them, but there are 45 cases that they think... are attributed to this group, and they don't know anything about it, but they just happen to have a spare copy of his file, which they're happy to give out to other people to take home with them and study in case they find anything. And amongst the things that are in there is a little doodle of a squiggly line with a little circly squiggly line around it, which both Miller and Mark Harris assume is a coastline. And in fact, Mark Harris knows that coastline.
He just can't remember where it is.
And there's also a word, Felicitos. And Miller knows that word. And they go back and they study for a while, and then it comes to Miller. He remembers it when he was reading the ship's log from an 1880 whaling ship in which the captain mentioned an island called Felicitos where a strange creature lives. And Mark was like, yeah, I know that creature. I know this island. And they're able to track it down, which is, I've got to give Miller that. That is one hell of a memory. That he can remember that word from a 1880s whaling log, which you have to wonder, what was he doing reading
An 1880s whaling log.
I mean, I suppose he could have been doing it to study, doing research with regards to, you know, how many whales or things like that, historical. So, I mean, I suppose there could be a valid reason for
it. There could be something valid. I mean, maybe he had to study oceanic history when he was in university. Yeah. Who knows?
So, but it turns out that this island is off the coast of the southern coast of Brazil.
Bit of a distance.
Especially since that's over in the Atlantic and they're based in the Pacific.
Right.
Now, I did a little work on that. And I'm sure assuming you did. That they can go through the Panama Canal, which I would assume that they can, then that's just 9,300 miles to get to the roughly the southernmost point of Brazil, which is what I used as a... I sort of used Los Angeles and southernmost border of Brazil and, what is it, Uruguay? Next down there?
I think so, yeah.
So that's 9,300 miles, and from a previous episode, we worked out that the top speed of the cetacean is 67 miles per hour. That is a continuous journey of just shy of 6 days. Which is
a lot can happen in 6 days.
A lot can happen in 6 days, but you know something? That's a lot better than I thought. When I originally watched the episode and they were talking about going off the coast of Brazil, I was thinking, you know, that's got to be a 3 week journey. Or not knowing.
Yeah, I thought sort of the same thing, too. I thought, oh, well, they're heading this direction. It's got to take them roughly a month.
Assuming at least that the sub can do 67 miles an hour continuously.
Sustained.
For 6 days. And, if you know, taking into account that they're going to have to queue up for the Panama Canal, which I don't know.
And that's a very lengthy process.
Yeah,
but
I don't know how long
still,
that is.
That's at worst, that's going to add a day.
Yeah, so they're, you know, 6-7 days, a week to get there. A lot can happen in a week. Meantime, Elizabeth has been taken to this little island off the coast of Brazil. And she meets the head villain, Mary. And I thought it was kind of funny that the triumvirate here is Dick, Jane, and Mary. Some very imaginative names on these people. And she says, you know, I want you to help me with this scientific project. And Elizabeth's all, I'm not going to help you, and I'm going to leave, and oh, you can't keep me here. And, well, you know, I'll tell you what, in a few days, we'll talk again. Meantime, take her to the spa.
You will love it.
You'll love the spa. And what we find is that the spa has some sort of... It's got all sorts of red lights and some cool 70s tinkly music playing. And when you're in the spa, it makes you... What would you say? Malleable?
It makes you very cooperative.
Happy, cooperative.
Susceptible to suggestion. Actually makes you downright loopy, I think. It makes you loopy.
I wonder if that has any impact on how effective their brain power is for doing the demanding work that she wants them to do which we don't know what it is.
It's a good question.
At this moment.
At this point we don't know, but I don't want to go too far ahead, but there is something that does come up later where in terms of something that Elizabeth does, which makes me think, you know, given this thing that she's doing here, this would suggest that this is not so much about mind control as it is about just it's like drugs. It's like
they're inhibitions, kind of.
Right. Like, yeah. You know, like alcohol or some other kind of mind altering substance. And if that were the case, yeah, how effective would they be on a scientific project?
Yeah. So now this is one of the interesting things about the time, the badly jumbled time in this episode, because Mark and the submarine crew are coming to her rescue, and we're presented with another scene at the time that Mark and the sub have arrived, more or less. And Jane says to Elizabeth, well, now that you've had a few days to think about it, or either that or Elizabeth said, well, now that I've had a few days, I'm ready to go to work on the project. So it's clear from the dialogue that Elizabeth has been taking these spa treatments for several days. And from the earlier dialogue, it's kind of obvious that Jane thinks that it will take a few days for her to go along with this process. And so we're given that. So, you know, we could say that if it only takes 6 days for Mark to get there, that's not too
not too shabby.
Sink.
No.
It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. And partially because some of the stuff that happens later on. As soon as the cetacean shows up, of course, they launch a torpedo at it to destroy it. But it's not your ordinary torpedo. It's the kind that is really just a limpet mine that sticks to the side of the sub. We're told it's not magnetic, and that if they try to do anything, they're going to blow it up. You know, degauss the sub or something like that. That it just won't work. This is the part where I think something's cut out again, because we're presented with a scene where Mark is standing there at the airlock with Miller and I think CW.
And he looks like he just got out of the water.
That's my question. Did he get out of the water, or is he just getting ready to get into the water? Because he says, "I know this adhesive material."
Substance.
And it's like, how does he know it if he hasn't been out to feel it or taste it or whatever it is he has to do? So I just couldn't tell from the picture whether or not he was just getting ready to go or whether he'd come in.
It looked like he'd just gotten out of the water. I mean, he had the towel around his neck, which he usually does when he's drying off.
So then he says, well, I've got to go out, and he leaves. I mean, they give him the thing and he goes back outside again. And he synthesized a thing that will make that anemone glue fall off. So it feels kind of jarbled and makes no sense. But anyway, he gets the thing off, and yay, the sub is saved, but Jane decides to blow it up. Sorry, Mary decides to blow it up. Jane doesn't want to blow it up because it's got Mark on it, and she loves Mark. Basically. So we've got this little interplay there of a little bit of tension between Mary and Jane, who happen to be sisters, by the way. I think we failed to mention that. Side note, anemone. I can't say anemone. Just said it. There you go. Anemone glue. If I recall my chemistry correctly, but if I recall my product marketing correctly, back in 1977, that was an interesting idea, but not too many years ago, they started making those nose strips for breathing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They glue on your nose, and then, or you stick to your nose, and then
it's supposed to help you prevent snoring.
Yeah, and sports people use it because it increases your ability to pull air through your nose. Also, it works. They do work. That is made with, I believe, anemone glue. It's a natural bio bioadhesive that they've come up with. So it is it's a viable piece of technobabble that they came up with there.
They actually got right.
Yes. Yes. So that's just an aside that has no meaning other than I was trying to come up with something worthwhile out of Man from Atlantis.
Well, something to possibly justify or give kind of some sort of applause towards Man from Atlantis.
1 point for Man from Atlantis.
Something they actually did right for once. I mean, especially after the way they completely blew it on science last episode.
Completely and utterly blew it on science. So now here's so once they think the sub is blown up, Miller in a wetsuit and Mark Harris not in a wetsuit come to the island where they are promptly captured.
By a bunch of what bodyguards that look like they are taking a break from professional wrestling.
Yeah, that's a crew that if you watch any show from the 70s where they need a goon squad, these are the guys from the goon squad. I've just watched them in at least two episodes of The $6 Million Man. I've seen them in The Incredible Hulk. I mean, they're just these same guys that they get over and over again.
I think they really are
bodybuilders,
professional wrestlers.
I thought they were football players, but yeah, they could be.
They're some kind of either football players or pro wrestlers. I know that a lot of pro wrestlers would, especially back at that time, I mean, they would moonlight on television just to try and eke out a better living.
Pro wrestlers or actors? What?
Oh, I know. Perish the thought.
They've rocked my
world. I've shattered an illusion, haven't I?
Shattered an illusion. I thought Hulk Hogan was, well, anyway.
You thought he was real.
I thought he was a real wrestler, man. I thought that mustache gave him superpowers.
No, it's his hair.
His mustache.
He's like Samson.
His hair. So now this is one of those ones where, once again, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. Mark and Miller are brought forward. They meet... They meet Mary. Mary says, take Miller to the spa. And they march him off. And then Mark starts to follow, and they go, oh, no, you come with me.
You come with me. And then where does she take him?
She takes him to the control room. She has a little talk to him. And really about nothing. I mean, kind of nothing. But it's no more than 5 minutes conversation. And then she says, take him to the spa. Actually, no. They don't say take Miller to the spa. Elizabeth takes him and says, come on, I have to show you something, and they leave. 5 minutes later, and it can't possibly be more than 5 minutes later, Mary takes the goon squad and tells him to take Mark to the spa. When he gets to the spa, Miller is already in there, kitted out in his swimwear, and he is already completely and utterly under, not only is he under the spell of this chemical, but he's already had time to be talking with Elizabeth about her upcoming singing recital that they're having. And there just isn't time for this conversation or his conversion. No. If it took Elizabeth days, it took Miller moments.
Doesn't say much about him, does it?
And in fact, we do see evidence that this stuff should... From this point on, everything we get indicates that just as soon as your foot touches that water...
You're under its
spell. You're under it. And so... Bad writing. Mm-hmm. But as you correctly predicted last week... I'm going to call it a correct prediction. Mark is immune to this material, to this substance that is in the water in the spa.
It's his skin.
Yes, he's immune to it, and so that makes him immune to being one of the people who has disappeared. That's how I say you got a hit last week with it being... I think it's close enough that we can call it. Of course they needed a plot device that made him immune.
How else can he save the day?
And... But wait, He's also put his foot in it, and he tastes it a little bit, too.
He puts his fingers.
Yeah, he puts his finger and he brings
fingers
it to his
in
mouth
there, and then he raises them to his mouth, and he kind of smells it and licks it a little bit. And
he nods and knowingly to himself.
He knows immediately what this substance is.
That's right. Well, I suppose you want to talk about the recital. Go on.
Oh, God. All I have to say is this. Miller, Elizabeth, don't give up your day jobs.
Yes, so under the spell and so happy and go-lucky they are that they're having, like, talent shows of the scientists. And Elizabeth is giving a singing recital, and Miller is playing accompaniment, even though he's only taken piano in the second grade.
And he's playing like he's, you know, he sounds like he's been playing for years, but to watch it was it bordered on painful.
Well, her singing wasn't that bad. I mean, it wasn't good, but
for what she was singing, completely wrong. Her voice isn't that bad, but I really just want to blast the writers for giving her that particular number. It was way beyond her abilities to properly pull off. But then again, maybe that's to help create this illusion that they're all just punch drunk with whatever it is this chemical is doing to them, by making them think they can do things that are completely just not right.
I'm still wondering about the quality of their work at this scientific establishment, because Mary has got them doing some big project. And
she needed Elizabeth because she was an oceanic biologist.
Right. And they were working on, she's got certain projects for these different people to work with. And on her recommendation, she keeps Miller because he's a brilliant scientist as well. And then she keeps Mark around because, well, Mary, like Jane, like sister, has got the hots from Mark.
Yeah.
They see him, they fall in love with him.
It's his eyes.
and that sort of winsome way he has of being sort of clueless. It's
charming.
So Mark gets Jane to help him get out to the ocean so he can collect an antidote to the stuff in the
whatever
spa.
It is that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The MacGuffin in the pool.
Yeah.
And Jane gets caught helping him. And so she's dunked in the pool, in the spa, and becomes a mindless zombie. It's one time she's betrayed her sister too many, and or she's becoming a mindless zombie. And Mark finds his way back into some underground tunnels, opens a random water pipe, dumps the rocks in it without grinding them up or anything. And miraculously, up in the spa room, the lights in the room change clear,
and the tinkling music stops,
and anyone touching the water is instantly freed of the water.
Yeah, I had no idea that this chemical, that whatever it was that was creating this bad behavior, was bioluminescent.
Yes, suddenly the room's no longer red, and all they have to do is to get everyone to step in the water, and as soon as they're in the water, they're free, and in fact, they've got the goon squad there, and all they have to do is to flick water on them,
splash water on them,
and then they also stage a rebellion. I think actually we had learned what was going to happen before this. Mary's project...
We did, yeah. I was going to say that. Yeah, we missed something
very important. We did miss that point where... Right, they captured Mark, they took him back.
Well, Mark starts doing some wandering around during the recital.
Yes.
And that's when he goes down.
He finds the spaceship.
He doesn't find the spaceship first, he finds the plumbing.
Finds the plumbing, then he finds the spaceship. And
this rocket.
And Mary shows up and said, I'm keeping an eye on you. And so she explains her plan. Mankind is destroying the Earth. And it's just a matter of time before we're going to run out of resources, we're going to kill everybody. And so she has built this spaceship, which she calls the Ararat. the side says it's the FS1.
And it's an arc.
Yes, it's an arc, and she's going to go into space, to which Mark pulls out of his rear end Epsilon Eridani.
Yeah.
And she's like, how did you know?
And he all he does is just stare at her, and she says, Dr. Simon. And I'm like, did he? Really?
When?
So all we can say is this another cut scene?
Yeah.
Is, because you know, I can't figure out where the hell he pulled that one out.
And the way she says it, too, he doesn't know. In other words, Miller has not been told it's Epsilon Eridani. Miller has worked it out. Because she says something like, yeah, that Dr. Simon is brilliant. Something like that, to indicate that he'd worked out that it was Epsilon Eridani, which, amongst other things, is 10.5 light years from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Is, I believe, the star that Babylon 5 is around, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
10.5 light years, I mean, that's just a hop, skip, and a jump for a 1977 space rocket.
Yeah.
Mark kind of, you know, doesn't want to go along with this plan. So that was what had happened earlier, but he knew that she was planning on abandoning the Earth. And so I ask myself, apart from kidnapping the scientists, this is really not one of those Earth-destroying, bad guy kind of plots.
Well, not like in the pilot where you had, and I cannot remember his name.
Sure.
Yeah, how he, working on the same premise, had decided that he was going to destroy the Earth, or at least destroy the surface. So yes, you had this ticking time bomb, literally. We didn't have that here. She just wanted to go away and reseed humanity as well as whatever life she was able to collect.
Which in of itself is not a bad thing.
No, her methods are questionable.
The kidnapping
her
is
methods
obviously
are awful, but
terrible,
but the goal is the same. You know, I don't think this is a case of the ends justifying the means, no.
No, but it just isn't that big of a, you know, this is not a plot they have to thwart. All they need to do is to rescue the scientists and arrest this woman.
Right.
They don't need to, you know, stop it before the Earth is destroyed or anything of that nature. It's kind of an odd,
Well, she make some veiled threats about blowing up the base.
Yes, she did. At the end there, she wants Mark still. You know, everybody's out of her control. Mark has chased her to the rocket ship, and she's still like, Mark, you and I, we could go. You know, just get on the ship and leave and go to Epsilon Eridani. Which strikes me as being incredibly awful. She doesn't know about Mark's medical condition, needing water, or not necessarily even being a mammal. Just the two of them in a spaceship for, what, 100 years?
Roughly.
Or longer. And we don't know what kind of technology
that
they've built.
I will get to that in a minute.
So, in the end, she gets in the ship and she leaves. And everybody goes home, and that's the end of the story. So by herself, she left.
This is the thing that really just I found this bit perplexing. Now, obviously, some of the scientists that they were kidnapping had to be well versed in astrophysics, rockets, that particular technology. I don't care if you pick the best brains in the world in those particular fields, the technology is still limited. I mean, they might be able to come up with some really great theoretical concepts in terms of how to achieve near light speed, but the practical sciences still don't allow for that. You're still stuck with fuel-based rockets as your means of propulsion. At least until you get out into space, and then you can just let inertia do the rest.
Well, they could have used, for example, one proposed spacecraft design going back, I believe, well into the 50s, involved detonating nuclear weapons just behind...
I heard about that.
That was a legitimate project, and you can achieve...
some pretty good speed with that.
But you, of course, are putting out a trail of deadly high radiation.
Yeah, but it's behind you. You're going the other way.
Exactly.
You don't care.
You're behind the shield. That's and there's a lot of deadly high energy radiation in space, so it's not like you're, you know, peeing in the swimming pool kind of thing. I mean, it's really not as bad as it sounds.
There's other things to consider. I mean, we know from watching shuttle launches and not just that, but whenever NASA launches satellites to go to Mars or any of the outer planets, everything is based on these windows of time where you have certain planets in certain alignments. Part of that is to kind of maybe have a satellite do a slingshot bit, whatever. She is planning on going to something that is 10.5 light years away. I mean, and to just, okay, I'm going, and I'm going now.
Yeah.
Seem a little irresponsible.
She didn't even check the weather report.
No. And then again, is 10.5 light years, and that's only if you're going the speed of light. Logically, if she's lucky, she might get, maybe
0.8.
She's not going to get very, very close.
After time. I mean, this is the thing. It's the weight of the fuel that you have to get out of the gravity well of the Earth that is the real problem in space travel. When you have the space probes that we're slinging them around, this is because we can't carry enough fuel for them to continue to act under their own power. They've got to have an assist to get the speed up for it.
Right.
I believe, we have a probe that has the ion drive, and that is the drive that is just letting out just the faintest amount. A force that's less, they describe it as a force less than a piece of paper dropping on your hand. But because of the fuel source, and it's radioactive, of course, it's continuous. And the continuous nature of it allows it to build up incredible speeds compared to what we would normally get from a spacecraft. Because as long as you're under continuous thrust, that's continuous acceleration. But that necessarily had to be a small, smallish craft, and not what she's firing here. You could get some fairly fast speeds, but it would take a long time to get to those fairly fast speeds.
So basically, again, we boil it down to this: it's going to take her a lot longer to get to Epsilon Eridani, whatever planet it is that they're after, than just simply saying 10.5 years, because that's how many light years it is. It's going to take her a long time. And then there's one last little thing. She's alone.
She's alone. That's right. Well, she's got plenty of food then.
Oh, great. But so much for reseeding humanity.
Yeah, in this case, it's just a question of... Well, maybe they've got freeze-dried people in there. No?
No.
Animals? Race bank for animals? And I assume that was something that they had taken into account, that when they're going to go to this other world, that they were going to take animals and things with them. That ship doesn't really look big enough to carry everything.
We are led to believe that it is some kind of an ark, but it certainly doesn't look big enough, does it?
No, but then if you started doing the math on that...
I know.
That whole idea kind of falls apart.
I know.
You need a
gene
bank.
But then how many other ideas fall apart with this show?
Yeah. it's a mess. I mean, it's just a silly story, and it's, again, it's kind of a long way from the beginning of the story to the end of the story. You know, from the docks of Los Angeles and a strange kidnapping to a crazy woman with mind-controlling spa and a spacecraft to the stars at the end. There really is... It's just a weird hodgepodge.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more coherent than the last one, though.
I would agree. Yeah. I think partly, though, with the last one, we were dealing with these alien spores that was causing this completely erratic behavior. Oh, wait a minute. No, we still have that same problem. Now we have the mineral in the water that's causing erratic behavior. Ah, same thing.
And, of course, Mark is... Well, he wasn't immune last time, so this time he's got... Not only has he got the immunity, but he's got the ability to solve the problem with his new chemical analysis touch. I wonder if we'll ever see that again.
Only you know the answer to that, because I have not seen beyond this episode yet.
Oh, well. You've got something to look forward to.
Oh, I know.
So, this pretty much wraps up the Man from Atlantis pilot movies. And, well, it does wrap up the pilot movies. It doesn't just pretty much do it. It wraps it up quite... We're done.
Yeah, IMDb sort of refers to this as season one.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah, this was in the, I guess, 70, early 77, and then
Yeah, early 77, yeah.
And then the TV series proper started, you know, as standard, about September, October, something like that. 77, 78, standard TV series. So I guess you could call these kind of almost like a mid-season replacements, but they were in the 76-77 season of television. And I wonder whether when they made this episode, the series had been green-lighted already. Or whether or not they were still, you know, let's make four pilots and see what the ratings are, see what people think before we give the final go-ahead.
Some kind of probation.
Yeah. And if that's the case, why did they give
it
the go-ahead? Did they think they were going to make some corrections and make it better? Or did they think it was good enough? Did they have a clue who was watching the show? May not.
I think this is one gigantic fail on all marks. It's a fail in terms of who they thought their audience was. It's a fail on the network executives for thinking that this was something of some kind of quality for thinking that that's quality science fiction. I mean, it's a fail all, you know, from top to bottom.
And yet
there it is.
There it is. The series is coming.
God save us all.
I really,
because
don't...
we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it. Oh, we're going to talk about it. They've got some big-name guest stars.
Yes, they do. Some of them I am familiar with.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big
Pat
name.
Pat Morita.
Pat... Sorry. Oh, poor Pat Morita. I feel so sorry for that man, for his appearance in Man from Atlantis.
Look, ladies and gentlemen, consider that to be a teaser.
That is a spoiler. Pat Morita is... got an embarrassing part in the show.
Yeah, and I bet you people just can't wait to hear us talk about it.
Well, what are we up to next time? Next week must be...
I think
British?
We are... No, I think... Starlost?
Are we in Starlost or are we in Sapphire and Steel?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I thought we were doing British American. That would be...
Is that it?
Well, it could be if we want to make it so. We write our own ticket here. We can just do what we want. I think it's probably Sapphire and Steel, but it might be the Star Lost, or it might be something else. It could be Primeval.
Uh-oh. That's right, that's back.
No, I don't think we'll do Primeval. I think that would be...
It's Sapphire and Steel is next.
Sapphire and Steel.
Yeah, that's next on the list.
The penultimate story in the Sapphire and Steel saga. Well, we hope you'll join us again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Listening to the Fusion Patrol Podcast.